Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He's going to lob a few in.
Right.
You just start throwing gas. Like, you're throwing
the
95
kids.
Against bring these it. Kids. It's like a bad Will Ferrell movie.
Yeah.
You're blowing it by the kids,
talk.
And they're crying.
Right.
And people are looking at me like,
yeah.
You know this
you
guy?
You know this? Oh, yeah. There we are. The great dreams of Paul Burmeister.
Yeah.
Me
yeah.
just dominating 10-year-olds. Don't mess with me.
I've been trying to dial up a good one. Like, I'll lay awake at night before I fall asleep and think, but that'd be fun if I had another one that I could share in the podcast, but it just hasn't happened.
You can't force those kind of things.
Know.
You can't force. It might end up taking a weird turn, too.
Yeah.
And maybe we won't want to hear it, all right?
Yeah.
So let's be careful on that one, even though actually I welcome it. Let's not be careful.
Right?
Tell me next time. Yes,
that was
I like
PG.
That.
We could
right.
take it to PG-13.
Ooh, we can go R as far as this is Chris Sims Unbuttoned for
right.
a reason. Chris Sims Unbuttoned presented by Under Armour. Hope everybody's good out there. Yeah, it's What the Fuck Happened Wednesday. You know that. Episode 326. Please rate, review, send in questions. Always, always welcomed in that department. No doubt about it. Paulie Burmeister's here to drive the car as always. What's up? Everything good?
Everything is fine.
Yeah?
I'm wondering how you're doing at your house, balancing the holiday festivities and responsibilities.
Right.
/ pressure with, you know, still doing your job well.
Well, because I don't have those pressures at home.
Zero.
No. That's I just provide the cash, big guy, and then the wife has to provide the other stuff.
Even in
there.
December.
Even in December,
yeah.
Yes. Now, I mean, I worry a little bit about her gift.
Yeah.
But nothing like too... She does a good job of taking care of herself, and
yeah.
she will say things of like, "Don't buy me anything crazy. I've bought myself lots
it.
Of gifts already."
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
What
so
about the kids?
The kids, like, I'm a little involved. She'll show me because they make a Christmas list still,
yeah.
even though they know there's
awesome.
No Santa and all that.
Yeah.
But go through it, and she'll, you know, as she like kind of dwindles it down. Should I get this or this? I'll be sitting on the couch at night watching TV, whatever, and she'll show me on the phone, and
yeah.
that's about as involved as I get.
That sounds like you're not very involved.
No, it's not.
You're kind of half paying attention.
I'm not very involved.
Fine.
I'm actually, yeah. I am the party entertainer on Christmas Eve.
It's important.
I make sure everybody's, you know, drinking appropriate. We do.
Okay.
The wife does do the cooking. Because she's Sicilian and does some of the seafood dishes and all that.
Big Phil will be there.
Big Phil will be there. You know, I supply the marijuana if anybody wants that as well. Christmas trees in general. All
How
right?
many participants?
In that?
Yeah.
It depends. I have some
You don't
family...
have to give names. Just
no,
like a number.
I got it. I got some family members on both sides of my family and my that dabble. They'll
yeah.
dabble. So I can't always hold them to like, oh, they're going to smoke here tonight. Sometimes
yeah.
they say no or whatever else. Next time they come over, they're like, oh, yeah, I will take some of that. That's Oh, okay, that's great. What is this? And I tell them all about it. So that's what we do. I am pitiful. Christmas Eve night, though. I'm on a run of like six Christmas Eves in a row
of
not being able to help my wife put the gifts out late at night.
Because of what you did
earlier
I've
become
the night.
Too fucked up and I've had to lay it down. That's exactly right. So I'm transparent here, as you know, and that's usually what happens.
So like the next day when it's just the two of you,
right.
do you get any version of, you know, that I had to do everything?
No, my wife, she's a soldier that way. She handles
that
it.
That is awesome.
She is. She's
yeah.
great. She really is. And the other thing, too, is... My kids are at an age now, too, where they're older. They sleep in on Christmas morning. It's no longer like 6:30 in the morning, like, get up. We want to open the presents. It won't happen until like 9:30 or 10 in our house.
Mm-hmm.
So, she's good to me. She knows my flaws in life, and that's one of them.
I think we need her on the pod
we
sometime.
We do. She's been listening
like
to
for
the
real.
Pod. Yeah.
Like, sometime in the offseason, she could sit right here.
Right.
We could do a little bit of football and just a lot more of this.
Yeah, right. I mean, she'll probably tell you some great stories about me. Some things I don't remember or habits that I have that she's like, this is the worst thing about Christopher.
One idea would be me, Ahmed, your wife, and Pete.
Oh, great.
You can stay home that day.
So you all just crap on me. All
it
of
would
me
just
together.
Be a different kind of foursome.
Yeah.
Us four right here.
Great. Thanks a lot. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not opposed to it. Sure. Sure, I don't know how she'll feel about that, but she understands that, like, I tell everything anyways, so I don't think she would be bashful to say anything on here, for sure.
Should we talk some NFL?
Let's talk some football, baby.
Okay. I'm excited that we're starting with Niners and Bengals.
Right.
Very good game.
Right.
Very good game. As Peter King wrote about on Monday, kind of a snapshot of where the NFL is right now. A couple of teams hovering around 500.
Yep.
A couple of weeks they're good. A couple of weeks are like, what happened to these guys?
Right.
And playing for that chance to get into the postseason in mid-December. It's kind of happening all over the league.
All over the league, no doubt about it. These are two of the teams that I look at as far as the 49ers and Bengals that I think have a legit chance to make a run if they do get in the playoffs.
Agreed.
Yeah, I don't look at them as maybe I view some other teams where I go, yeah, they'll probably get in, but I don't know if they can really do damage. I think these two teams can. Like, I would throw both of these teams in the – wouldn't be shocked if they ended up in the NFC-AFC championship game if they do get in.
Both of them, really.
I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't – if you sat here and we were in the end of January and you're like, the Bengals are in the – I'd be like, I'm not shocked.
I knew you felt that way about San Francisco.
Yeah, Bengals I do too. I do. I have – again, I think what's different a little bit about the Bengals is the 49ers, just not the experience, not the battle test, right? And we've seen that. The last 2 weeks have resulted in two losses – I think because, again, they're still a young, kind of immature team. That I thought, like I told you last week, I thought they went toe-to-toe with the Chargers if they played 10 times. My thought was that the Bengals would win more than not. You know, and this game right here, game was as even as can be.
Yeah.
They're both talented. The way the first half shook out, I write in my notes, like, just little thoughts and go, you know, if you didn't tell me the score, I'd go, this game's tied. Except there was the two muff punts.
Mm-hmm.
And the two muff punts were a huge part of this football game and gave the 49ers a great advantage, you know, heading into the fourth and, of course, winning in overtime.
I think the cool part of watching the Bengals, as someone who just enjoys the league, like I don't have a favorite team at all.
Yeah.
Bengals are a fun watch.
A very fun watch.
If you enjoy offensive football and kind of getting to know young players both sides of the ball,
right.
Cincinnati's for you.
I agree. They got everything on offense, like as far as playbook, talent, everything there. I'd wish they'd package their plays a little bit better. I'll say
we'll get into that a little bit.
But defensively, there's talent all over the field. You've heard me talk about it. I think they're a hair too predictable on defense. We'll see some of that here too. But after that, I mean, yes, I think the talent on both teams is like legit. You know, we can make a run in the playoffs, and maybe even on a team's bad day that might be a little bit better than us, we upset them, and all of a sudden we're somewhere we shouldn't be. I don't think that's crazy thought for either one of these teams.
All right, getting into the details now of what the fuck happened between the Niners and the Bengals. 26-23 overtime win for the 49ers. How about we start with George Kittle?
Yeah.
13 catches, 151.
Right.
I kind of had this feeling that I get when I'm watching the Green Bay Packers when it's Rodgers to Adams.
Uh-huh.
Rodgers to Adams.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you're like, are they going to double him or find a way to reduce this? Because clearly Aaron's dropping back and looking for him first.
Yes.
And it's the same thing when you watch Jimmy G and Kittle right
now. No doubt about it. Or Debo Samuel gets involved in certain weeks. I think they probably took a little off of Debo's plate because they knew he was coming back from the groin injury. He wasn't as big a part of the game plan. It's a point, though, I think that's legitimately worth bringing up is that, to me, again, you said Devontae Adams, LaFleur, Shanahan was with LaFleur. He knows how to get Kittle the ball. Oh, McVay was with Shanahan, too. They throw to Cooper Kupp every other play. You know, they have a great belief and an ability to focus game plans on their best players to make sure they get them the ball. They're going to go down swinging with their best punch. They're not going to let you get away and go, oh, we're gonna find a way to get it to our third guy today.
Right.
They're not. They're not going to do that until they feel like you've taken away their bread and butter. And that was one area where in this game, I don't think they took away the bread and butter of Kittle. And in fact, I would say they didn't do anything at all in some certain situations that, you know, of course, ended up burning their butts a little bit.
And the numbers represent that pretty well, Chris. 15 targets, 13 catches for that 151.
Right.
So, I mean, most of the time they looked his way, he ended up with a reception.
Ended up with a reception. Like, I know Zach Taylor made a comment after the game where he said, I promise you, we tried like hell to take him away, and he just finds a way to make those plays. You know, Were they aware of where he was lining up? Certainly. Were they taking him away? Mm-mm. Absolutely not. I can't say that. No. Taking somebody away is going out of your way or, you know, outside the box of your normal game plan to go, this isn't happening, right? Right. And that's where I think we'll break down this first play here to kind of show that.
I think this is a big catch on the game-winning drive in overtime.
Yeah, game-winning drive, overtime. You see Kittle to the right, you know, here. And I mean, again, this fits a lot of my themes all together a little bit just with, yes, you know they're going to be looking for Kittle in a big situation. That was already apparent during this game. So to me, that's like when you got to this point, or late in regulation, he has the catch that put them in a position to kick the game-winning field goal. They missed it ultimately. But I want to go Von Bell one-on-one with George Kittle is not trying to take George Kittle away. That's a matchup the 49ers go, oh, we'll throw to him every time then. It's a safety on George Kittle? Sure, we'll take it. That's not taking him away. Again, we're going to see the Bengals in a quarters look here, which you've heard me say. They play this a little too much at times.
Yeah.
And really, it's as simple. It's just verticals. He's going to run a straight go route and kind of bend it in underneath Von Bell here and come around this linebacker.
And at this point of the game, he has double-digit catches already. There's nobody close to him to even reroute him.
Nobody.
Look at that.
Nothing. Nothing to him at all. Right, exactly. So this is where I want to fight back a little bit about, you know, again, what Zach Taylor said. I'm not trying to call him a liar, but I would go, I just want to see more to take him away.
Right.
That's what I want to see. And, you know, already to your point, we talk about the catch at the end of regulation. You know, they had a got-to-have-it moment at the end of the first half after the muff punt, a touchdown to Kittle, where he scores a touchdown with 18, 20 seconds left, where I go, they're going to him. We know they're going to him here now, so we got to do something. And, again, here, we'll play this out, and this is pretty easy to see here, you know. And, again, that's not my drawing, you'll see. But so that was Adam Archuleta, who I do like listening to. But here you go. You got a little bit of like a quarters blitz, but to your point, again, nothing. I mean, again, this is pretty standard. No offense or no quarterback's going to look at this and go, oh, wow, this is too complicated. I'm confused. Let me hold the ball a little bit here.
This is, in fact, exactly what you want if you want a tight end down the middle.
100%. And this is the extent right here of what we're talking about, getting a hand on, like, the best tight end in football.
As he's running by.
As he's running by. And they got good linebackers, certainly. I believe that's the kid from North Carolina State, maybe Pratt, that's trying to get his hands on there. But I'm not faulting him. This is a coaching thing more than anything. But, you know, again, I think what you say here is pretty real. First off, extremely easy release up the field, nothing hindering him. So he gets to go full speed, gets a hand put on him. And then, as you see right here, we get to the top of the route. And, I mean, come on. That's, I mean, here. Look at this. Nobody in your face, 7-on-7, and this is less than 7-on. This is a walkthrough throw in the NFL. Like, well there's nobody there against our best player? So, yeah, that I think sums up the game a little bit for Cincinnati. We talked about some mistakes they made, certainly. But on the defensive side of the ball, they did some good things. They stopped the run, you know. They did not let the 49ers run game gash them. It was Jimmy G in the pass game that won. It was Kittle specifically. I know you had the one Deebo Samuel touchdown run for the most part, but it was Kittle followed by Ayuk in the pass game, and you know Kittle specifically, the Bengals did not have answers for it.
Let's take a look now at the other side of that matchup. The Bengals offense against the Niners defense finish in an exciting way in the fourth quarter for Cincinnati, but no touchdowns until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, no touchdowns in the fourth quarter. 49ers are good. We know that. There was some success moving the football. You know, the Bengals missed a field goal at one point when they were down 20-6. That could have made it 20-9. It was a chip shot field goal.
Yep.
But I think my assessment, again, this 49ers defense is good. You heard me say last week, it's really good. I think the Bengals pose some interesting problems for them because of what we talked about. 49ers corners are not good. Mm. They got some no-names on the outside. All right. And the numbers backed it up, let alone what I said with my eye last week, that the Joe Burrow and the Bengals will throw the ball outside and go, wait, our guy's better.
Yep.
Our quarterback will throw a strike, and we'll just make it that, period. Now, where I think a little bit where the game was different, at the 49ers front did not let them run the ball, even when they were in cover two.
Right.
So that's disappointing if you're a Bengal fan.
Because, Joe Mixon, 18 carries, 58 yards.
Right.
It's not getting much out of it.
No, that's not getting much out of it, especially when they were playing pass defense a lot.
Yeah.
So that's even worse than what the numbers will really say.
Good point.
That bothers me a little. But the 49ers front is real. Like, listen, I just want to give, like, Bosa's back. DJ Jones, number 93 for the 49ers, hell of a player. I mean, Armstead, of course, is a hell of a player inside. And then they rotate the other defensive end. Ebukam is the one guy that starts and probably in there more than any other. But, yeah, it's a good front. Fred Warner was playing. We know how special he is. But I think this is where not being able to run the ball on the cover two looks. And I think they were a little late in the pass game to adjust to go, oh, wait, this is going to be a cover two day. Like, they're going to play cover two on us. You know, they called a lot of plays where the 49ers like to play a lot of quarters, which ends up being like man-to-man on the outside. It's hard to throw over the middle because the safeties right. are down a little bit in quarters coverage. But they don't play a lot of true cover two. And for those out there going, what's the difference? True cover two is like the corner goes over the top. I mean, the safety goes over the top of the corner to really protect him. And a lot of the times the corner has a responsibility of playing the short passing game where the safety then is protecting the deeper pass play down the field, and the corner tries to reroute that receiver to kind of mess things up. 49ers played, I would think, more cover two in this game than they played all year long. And the Bengals did not adjust quite quick enough, in my opinion, to go, oh, wait, this is the day it's going to be here.
Still, at the end, they had some pretty good success when you look at all four quarters in overtime passing the ball. And one of the things I really liked about this game, I remembered our conversations we had in the spring after they took Ja'Marr Chase, and we could picture, oh, Higgins, Boyd, Chase, yeah, this will be fun to watch.
No doubt.
14 catches, 245 for those three. So, I mean, to me, that was a good storyline.
Great storyline.
Ja'Marr Chase, 5 catches, 77 yards. And you mentioned when it was 20-6. I think your first play for the Bengals offense, you know, picks it up 20-6, they're down, and they face 4th-and-5. But we're going to see the Burrow-to-Chase connection here.
Burrow magic here. And really what you get here is, like, again, this is not my drawing. This is Adam Archuleta special. But this is – it's quarters, okay? And then it's half, okay? Here's half right here, all right? Now, this guy can kind of stay with the receiver as he goes upfield if he's got no responsibility or anything in the flat. You know, a play like this to where could really expose like a cover two where this guy's doing this and this guy's here jamming it in the flat. You get the back out in the flat, right? And now he sits on this. And then you get a Ja'Marr Chase who comes down and basically now is one-on-one in the safety and runs an out route or something similar like that. That's how you kill a cover two, right? That's really what you do. They do something similar to this on this play as we play it out, right? You see, there's the back out of the backfield. He was checking protection, so he doesn't get there real fast to make that corner sit, right? So now the corner can kind of play halvesies, and there's the backer there as well to kind of watch this. Again, like what I said, if he got out here fast, he would probably be down here, but I understand they're trying to help out on protection here. This play, cover two, again, because of this, the corner over here gets some depth, and they'd run, what do you call it, you know, just a little corner route with Chase, and he's not open. So I'm certainly not, you know, faulted by Joe Burrow or anybody for missing reads here at this point. It's 4th-and-5. This is more about, I just want to show the magic, the connection that Chase and Burrow have, because it's kind of special. And I just want to, like, warn everybody if it's going to happen. Burrow is going to end up looping out and coming out here. When he throws the football, Ja'Marr Chase, who will be on the back end line, okay, is going to still be running across the back end line as the ball's thrown. And Burrow puts the ball in a spot where he goes, he'll know he's got to come back and get this. And Chase puts the brakes on and comes back, realizing, and Joe Burrow just puts the right touch, the ball perfectly in the right spot to where even though Chase was running this way, he just had a great feel. I'm sure he saw the release of Burrow and put the brakes on in a hurry, and that's what I want everybody to peep here. Chase is going to come back up and then come back out, and the throw and the timing of all of it, and hopefully I can pause this right where Burrow is throwing it, okay, just to show you. So here we go. All right, let me just slowly go back just a little. All right, here we go. Let me see if I can get the slow-mo. All right, so you see Chase here at the top of the screen. All right, he's still running this way. Here's go. Burrow's still got the ball in his hand. Burrow's going to throw the ball back over here. Chase isn't going to realize it's there until about right here, and he's going to come back and get it. Just an absolutely unbelievable play, really, by both guys. Really, it really is. I mean, Chase's ability to stay in bounds after redirecting and having a guy, you know, kind of in his way, so he's trying to avoid that. And Burrow just knowing and being able to really, what's the most important thing here,
is he reads how the safety is running so hard this way that he knows if he throws anything over here, it's going to be hard for that guy to put on the brakes and stop.
I don't think I've seen that in the back line. I mean, it's the back shoulder fade concept we usually see on the sideline.
It kind of is.
On the back line of the
end
zone.
It's not planned. This is just two football players playing football. It really is.
That's wow.
Yeah, this is like scramble drill. Chase has got great instincts. You know, he had a drop or two in this game, and that's come up here as of late again.
Yeah, it has.
But damn, he's really good. He's a superstar. He really is. His talent is that of a top five, top ten quarterback. That was a cool play that certainly, you know, gave them a chance here at the end.
Okay, so touchdown. It was 26. Speaking of giving them a chance, let's pick it up now. Late fourth quarter, they're down 20-13. And I think this is with Burrow connecting with Boyd.
Yeah, it was a really cool play. And like I said, it took them a little while to get to some of the cover two plays, right, in the offense. And really a play, Higgins, you talked about Higgins and all the stats he had in the football game.
Yeah.
Higgins, he really benefited from the cover two plays. And again, you got cover two here. Hey, there's a corner right here in the flat. You know, you might have you have Fred Warner flying down the middle of the field because it's a true Tampa two here. Safeties are this way. And for Higgins, what they did a lot of the times throughout the day is put the tight end here. They let like Boyd run through the middle, right? So now it continues to clear this middle linebacker out, and Higgins would come through and then be in that spot that was voided by the defense. They killed it with that play. That's why that was probably one of their bread and butter plays of the day. This is not that. This is a cool play, but I wanted to say, again, cover two, Bengals getting a little late into recognizing it was a cover two game. They had the right plays. It took them a little while to get to it. This is a cool one right here, Paul. I really like this. Now, again, we got let me just make sure I get this right. All right, so Higgins on the outside. It's cover two. He's going to run the go route up the sideline. All right, what do we say? Cover two, this corner, he's got responsibilities in the flat, right? Well, they're going to put the tight end in the flat to kind of keep him down here low. And as they do that, okay, so now so he goes out, tight end flat, corner's right here. Safety back here is backing up because there's a receiver going at him. And Boyd kind of runs a little bit at the corner. Okay, he's going to run at the corner and then up. But the corner's worried about his responsibility, which he's been coached to do, which is stop the flat. All right, so that's kind of what happens here. I thought this is a cool play. This is a play I've been seeing around the league more and more this year as far as how to beat Tampa 2, cover 2. And I just wanted to just show everybody a little here. You know, you see here, there's Uzoma. He's coming off. He's going to get out here in the flat. Josh Norman's going to kind of hang right here at some point. You see here, Higgins is going to continue up. And my man Boyd's going to kind of sneak up right behind him and then wheel it up the field. And Burrow puts a ball that's on the money, as we see here. Steps up in the pocket, gets hit. You know, again, it's the one thing that scares me about the Bengals. The offensive line can be spotty at times. And Burrow still gets hit a little too much. But, like, this is pretty awesome. I mean, it really is.
That's great because they
– on the money.
Textbook in the sense that the two people that can affect that route cover, the corner and the safety, they have other things they had to worry about first.
They got the people – they exposed the scheme, right?
Yeah.
They cracked the code a little bit there, I think is what we want to say. And to your point, how you're talking about they're a fun watch.
Yeah.
That's why they're a fun watch. You know, they got talent. They got all the plays in the playbook. And then they usually got what I always call like a few game shot fuck you plays this week
that are
going to be hard for you to stop.
All right. Let's take a peek at what both teams have coming up before we move on to the next game. Atlanta, San Francisco. See the Niners staying on track here?
I do. I mean, again, I respect Atlanta, but these are the kind of games that they don't win. Right, it's just when they've played, you know, Bucks teams with overpowering defensive lines.
Yeah.
I think they're gonna have a hard time on that side of the ball, creating a lot of plays, and the Falcons defense, you know, it just doesn't have a whole lot of great players on it. I can't see them slowing down the 49ers.
And a really good one in the AFC, Bengals Broncos. I mean, huge meeting to both teams for the postseason.
Huge meeting. Huge. And then you got the Broncos with a great secondary that can slow down, you know, the passing game to a degree.
Teddy's playing pretty well.
I hope he's aggressive this week. Again, that's the big thing.
There's
I know. That's the big thing with Denver.
Just too many plays and yards left on the field all the time. But, yeah, you know, that will be an interesting matchup. And I wouldn't be shocked if this is a week that Teddy's aggressive. Why? Because, like you heard me say, like, a lot over the last 2 weeks, the Bengals are a little bit predictable, and you can kind of draw up some shots against them if you got some talent at receiver. But I do think Cincinnati is the better, more complete football team. It's at Denver. We'll see. This is a true gotta-have-it game for the Bengals right here.
Big time.
We're going to kind of see what they're made of here.
I know you were here Sunday afternoon, and when it gets to that point in this building, if you're involved with football night late Sunday, it's hard to really keep a close eye on those late kicks.
Yeah, yeah.
I was at home, so a fun challenge for all of us fans was to keep track of what was going on, Bengals and Niners, and also Bills,
yeah,
Buccaneers.
Sure. Right.
A couple of back-and-forth games. So let's get into what happened with Tampa Bay and Buffalo. Truly a game of a tale of two halves for both teams.
Definitely.
Offensively and defensively. Let's start with the Buccaneers' offense and how they just kind of made it look easy in the first couple of quarters.
Well, their offense, again, I mean, it's you know, spoiled with riches. I mean, it really is. Big offensive line, phenomenal at pass protecting. You got weapons that are mismatches across the board. You know, you got a good running back. And then you got a playbook that has everything. I mean, everything. You know, again, this is not only is, and then you got Brady at quarterback. So not only do you have all of that, but I would certainly put the Bucs offense in one of the five best offenses just on, you know, paper, scheme, plays, whatever.
All of it.
It's one of the best in football. They have an answer for everything. And with Bruce Arians and Leftwich, what I love about them too, you know, their answers aren't usually, let's find a 4-yard completion. Their answers are, let's find a 40-yard completion and really screw you.
Yeah.
And that's what I like watching about them. And, yeah, their offense certainly gave Buffalo some big issues on the defensive side of the ball early on.
Yeah, Brady was really good in that first half.
Yes, he was.
Time he dropped back, it felt like he was doing that one little step up to climb the pocket or one little shift over, not really that affected.
Right.
Kept finding the right place to throw from and the right receiver. And I also thought he had some really nice help from Fournette, too.
Definitely. 100%. You know, and that's what put Buffalo in a bind. That's why, you know, again, it's why I picked Tampa, just because it's a big unit that it's hard to, you know, overpower that offense. Buffalo's a smaller defense. They play one gap type of defense. We're going to shoot this gap. And that doesn't always match up well against these type of teams like we've seen with, you know, New England beating Buffalo the week before or the Colts game earlier this year, or the Titans game. They have issues when they got to play these big powering offensive lines.
And sometimes teams get burned by a blitz and a disguise. Keep that in mind here as we watch Fournette. About halfway through the first quarter, still no score.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's a double puller here. That's what we got. The right guard and the left guard going to come around and pull. I mean, they probably saw this. This is not a play that Tampa runs often, okay? They don't do this. I guarantee they saw New England do this to Buffalo and said, we got to do this week. This just doesn't make sense. And I think what also happens here, because Buffalo's a numbers team, they're going to play the numbers of what they think you might do in certain formations. I would bet you more times than not with, you know, tight end, receiver, that I would bet you more times than not in this formation, if they get like a weak side shade nose and they have nobody over the guard, the left guard, that they probably run weak a lot. So the Bills here are trying to do a late disguise of safeties. Poyer was down here. Now the snap is going back. Here you got Micah Hyde coming down. I do believe Teron Johnson was going to blitz off the edge here, but it happened so quickly as far as seeing the run that, you know, he doesn't really get the chance to blitz. And ultimately what I want to show you here is they're going to get out on the edge, but they can't defend it with this defensive call. There's no way. And I'm just going to let show you here first off just a quick little still shot. Hopefully I can get it just right. All right. And whoops, not that one. Hold on a second here. So Fournette gets it, all right? And here's the problem, all right, is Milano's setting the edge. So he's responsible out here. But now because of the backside pulling guard and the way they slanted the front and everything, there's an extra gap on the front side. And Tremaine Edmonds has a gap to his right and a gap to his left. He almost can't be right. And that's really the big problem with the play here as you go forward. And, of course, it ends up in a touchdown. And you see that Lenny is still legit.
Yeah.
I mean, again,
Yeah, I mean, again, I want to get at all the people who told me, oh, what are you talking about? Leonard Fournette's done last year, because people were killing me when I was saying this is a great move. But now I don't hear them anymore. They've gone somewhere.
It was also December of last year that he really started to come on.
Right. So here, this is a better view. Again, I think probably their number one run. Again, you see he's a shade nose right here on the edge of the center. There's nobody on this guard. One of their big runs is just do this right here. Let this guy boom the nose tackle and get up to the second level and have him cut off. You know, this guy right here, or he comes out and blocks this guy. Excuse me, that's the defense end, the nickel guy's out there. That's one of their go-tos. But as you'll see here, again, they're going, he's got here, right? He's got here, and Tremaine Edmonds is responsible for this gap right here. All right? So I think I got that right. All right? Oh, no, I'm wrong. I got it right. And as they pull, boom. Oh, I'm wrong with that one, too. Sorry. The double puller, it's going to leave that extra gap along the edge that you'll see here. So let me see if I got this right here. Let's see. All right. So you see there. Oops. Our thing's a little slow here. All right. Now, like right there. You can see he's got the inside gap. He's got that gap. He's there. He's playing slow play because he has to the right of the center, but also knows at this point, wait, gaps are disappearing, right? And what happens again is because of the double pullers, you're going to see as we go here that there becomes an extra gap with the puller, right? You got double pullers. So am I making sense there? Are you following along with me? Am I talking too much gibberish here, right?
I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's responsible for the edge. Rousseau was responsible for the next gap inside, but they blocked down. They pulled two guards around the edge, and now there's an extra gap to the strong side. And I don't know how you can defend it with the way they shifted the defensive line down. I think Taron Johnson was supposed to be blitzing off the edge or something. But basically, when this happens, they're asking Hughes or Taron Johnson to get over there and make the tackle. And what I want to show you is this guy right here has no chance. What does he do in that situation? You could see there's a gigantic gap on both sides, right?
He so just gets engulfed.
And I can't blame him. He's just trying to blow it up at this point,
right?
Because he's going, he can't be right. The guy's got a huge hole either side of it. And that, to me, you know, is some of the compromises Buffalo gets in because they're not big up front and they have to disguise and do some things to take away things in the run game. But as you know, when you disguise and sometimes get a little creative in the run game,
right?
They call the right run play, and we're hitting your head on the goalpost touchdown time.
And it's not only a 47-yard touchdown run. I mean, I think he was literally untouched.
Yeah, other than I think at the end when he stiff-armed Micah Hyde. I don't think anybody touched him. Exactly,
but
right.
As he got through the first level, second level, I mean, it wasn't even that close.
No, you're right. Not even close.
Not just getting tackled, but even being
not
touched.
Not even touched. Exactly,
as he was
right.
Building
so perfect call.
There.
I bet you they had a good feel of what the defense might do. Buffalo's trying to play a defense to take away something Tampa might do.
Right.
And Leftwich and Arians won on that one.
First half, defensively for Buffalo, to steal one of your phrases, strugglesville.
Yeah.
All the way around. I mean, that was bad in the run game.
Right.
I thought in the second quarter, you know, Brady really got going, you know, just, I mean, every time he dropped back. Not the huge play, but completion, first down. They just kept coming. And the one common theme there, clean pockets.
Yeah, clean pockets, right. And Buffalo, who likes to do creative blitzes and do certain things, hey, this guy blitzes, this guy drops out. You know, they can't blitz against Tampa because they're not going to be able to match up with everybody across the board. And there's no Tre'Davious White, so that hurts that even more. And then also what we've talked about, Tampa's a phenomenal screen football team. So when you, like, when you put everybody down here and do crazy stuff like this, Tampa will throw the ball out here to this guy and then send a bunch of blockers out. And now you got everybody in here all screwed up, and they'll run a screen and he'll have blockers and nobody around him for 10 or 15 yards. They have answers for everything. All right, on this play, this is simple, okay? It's a cool defense by Buffalo. They're trying to take away certain things. You're going to get Mike Evans ultimately, you know, on a corner route for the touchdown. Up here, these two are kind of bracketing the outside receiver as he comes in. Milano's going to carry Gronk up the sideline on that side. And this side, you're going to see basically, you know, these three guys, and really four ultimately, are going to try to cover these three, as you see, all right? Because Buffalo will take calculated chances. He's going to play inside here, and let Gronk go this way. He's going to cut him off from inside because he knows the safety's going to go help this guy out. And I'm sure they had the numbers to back it up that Gronk doesn't run a lot of maybe inside post down here or whatever. And you'll see this as this goes by here. All right. You can see here. Let's see if I can time it out. Again, you see Evans, look, they're trying to pass some of this stuff off with these guys, right? He's breaking down on this guy coming underneath. There's a guy out here, too. I mean, here's Godwin here, too, who they made contact with. He's looking for anybody coming across. But what did that do? It left Micah Hyde one-on-one inside leverage on Evans downfield. And to your point, here's the point. So weapons, good offense, and I mean, Brady moves here. I don't know why. I mean, he doesn't need to go anywhere. He could have sat there, took a kneel, you know, tied his shoes, and then still thrown the ball here for a touchdown. But this was one of the themes of certainly the first half, that they couldn't even get close to Brady. I mean, they couldn't get close to Brady. I'm not even joking. This might be the most he got hit the whole first half, that little touch right there. He's got grass on his pants because he's run twice and slid for a first down, all right? Beautiful throw,
great
as you see right there. Right. But they had Buffalo in a tough spot. Buffalo played a cool defense. They did. You know, they played a cool defense where these two and these two, they watched him. He kind of ran into him, right? Teron Johnson tries to get back to stop the corner route. But when you can't get around the quarterback and you got some talent, it just doesn't matter. It right. doesn't matter. It just you cool defense, great. You see how they played it. Right. But like ultimately what they did is they cracked the code here because he has to be responsible for this guy if he runs out. So he's kind of stuck in no man's land. He realizes now with eyes like, I need to try to get back and help my safety who was in the middle of the field covering a route that's going out. That's not easy or even, you know, realistic to think he's going to stop that route against that coverage. Right. And Teron Johnson does his best job to get there, but it doesn't matter at that point when Brady has a clean pocket, can step into it and throw it like that.
This was such a big game, so much anticipation for it. I figured we'd be covering it in some way on Wednesday. So I was taking notes throughout while I was watching it at the house.
Cool.
And one of the things I wrote down in the first half a couple of times, Chris, was they're going to have to find a way to make Brady uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because that was just one example. It was a wonderful catch, but he had a very nice pocket to find the best spot to shuffle into and make a nice clean throw.
Yeah.
Second half, his production started to go down a little bit, and it wasn't so much that Buffalo did something to crash the pocket or make him uncomfortable.
That's what I thought, too. Like
He missed a couple of throws, and every quarterback misses throws sometimes, but he missed a couple that stood out that really kind of opened the door for Buffalo to come back.
I think so. It's the big question I got. What made Buffalo come back? And I thought, maybe Tampa took, you know, their foot off the gas. Again, I'm getting ready for a show. I'm watching a bunch of other games. I'm just getting general feels of the game.
Right.
But I'm thinking, you know, did Buffalo blitz more? They must have done something different. They really didn't change. They did not change as far as they played more vanilla in this game probably than any game the whole year.
Yeah.
And, you know, to your point, as I started to go through it, I went, wait, there's nothing here. It's really like Brady was off. I don't know any other way to say it.
There were a couple of throws that he makes easily nine
like
times out of 10.
All the time, right. I mean, it's greater than 9 times out of 10 probably, right? It's like 99 out of 100.
You're right.
Where you just go, I can't believe he missed this.
Right.
And that to me came back as, hey, we know Josh Allen was phenomenal, and he was unreal on that side of the ball in the second half. It was a magic man. It was a magic show. It really was. But, you know, at the same time, there was 3 consecutive drives where the Bucs really could have put the game away. And Brady missing throws certainly cost them the ability to do that. They had the ball twice at 24-3 right here at this point of the field and came away with no points. Then it went to 24-10, and you know, I'm not going to say he left points on the field, but I think you've seen the play. He had Chris Godwin wide open down the middle of the field on a first or second down. Or no, it was a third down in this case around midfield, right?
That one was a third down. I think this one.
This one is a second
and
eight.
And they're on the plus 39, second down eight. And I think this is where Gronk is open. He just missed it.
Just misses it. It's just what we saw with George Kittle a few minutes ago. It's the same type of play. Gronk is going to run right up here. He's got a two safety look, and he's going to kind of bend it in right here. And there's a huge place to throw him the football. So, what happens? You know, they get it. Boom. They're kind of going to a cover three. It's a real loose cover three right here. All right. You see the safety back here is three. All right. And now you got Curl Flat. He's going to kind of in the middle. He's got to worry about Curl Flat. And Gronk's going to sneak into a little hole here that's wide open. I mean, wide open. And again, it's second and eight. And this is about as easy as it gets for Tom Brady. And he misses the throw. And I do think we have another angle of this because this will really show it here as far as how badly he missed the throw. Again, I know he's not perfect in the world, Tom Brady, but damn, he's pretty close to perfect with everything. And there was some moments here where, yeah, I mean, there's nothing you can do there. He's not going to be able to catch that, even as awesome as Gronk is. He can't get on the ball there. Yeah, so that was really this. Not that, hey, Tampa's defense didn't change in the second half. They never, I thought, oh, we're going to see that they went into prevent. When I turned the film on, they must have played prevent and, you know, let, no. They were doing the same crazy blitzes they were doing in the first half.
Yeah.
Buffalo adjusted. They threw the ball quicker. They ran the ball with Josh Allen and the running back a little bit more. And then Josh Allen just made some magical plays I don't know what defense can stop that. That's unreal. But that to me was, you know, again, the Bucs were the bigger, more physical team. That's the issue with Buffalo. And, you know, yeah, I came away clearly still thinking the Bucs are the better football team.
Yeah.
And that Brady won't miss those type of throws if they play again.
I think we have one more. Yeah. Do we have one more of those throws?
Yeah.
Yeah, God would miss. And this is when it's 24-10, third down and seven. And it's a different pass catcher. It's a different route, but it's very similar. It's an over-the-middle intermediate throw, and I think you're right to correct. It's not just a throw Tom makes 9 times out of 10. It's probably closer to like 29 times out of 30.
Yeah, it's
more.
Exactly. It's slam dunk throws for Tom Brady. I'm sure he's pissed off. Now, listen, like Florio said something to me this morning, too. You know, he said he thinks that Brady got a little banged up in this football game when he slid or one of the quarterback sneaks, and this might have led to some of the errant throws. Mm. Maybe it did. Mm. Certainly. I don't know. And you're not going to get the story here either way. But, yeah, I mean, you're going to have Godwin on this play here going, okay, you're going to be going right down the middle of the field here. And it's 24-10, right? Cameron Brate underneath, all right? And Godwin's going to come behind it. And it's as open gets. And, yeah, you go, maybe Godwin should have made a great catch here. And Godwin's probably pissed at himself to go, wait, I'm making $17 million a year. I'd like to catch this too.
Ball came out
funny.
But
ball came out low. A lot of balls came out low, like rockets to the ground.
And, like, Tom's passes don't usually do this.
No, they don't.
It's a like the nose down right off his
head.
No
doubt. No doubt about it. You know, even as I sit here and looked at him with some of these throws as we go, like, he even leaning forward more than he usually does throwing the ball, like in that position there. Like usually he's a little bit more on his back foot than what we see there. He's kind of a lean forward, which is going to lead to the ball going downwards a little bit. But, yeah, clearly a missed throw there. Big opportunity, again, third and seven, not only to extend the drive, take more time off the clock, but, you know, once you get that completion, you're on the team's other 48-yard line. You're one more completion away from almost being in field goal range here.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, to me, again, Allen being amazing in the second half, Brady missing some opportunities to really, like, put their foot on the throat of the Buffalo Bills and be like, hey, cool, you guys are scoring some points, but the game's over. We've won. They missed those opportunities. But it doesn't change my opinion of the game or the teams. You know, again, the Bucs are, in my opinion, in another class.
Yeah.
They really are.
In the NFC,
regardless
of the seeds right now, where do you put the Bucs? And obviously, you've been thinking about, you know, Cardinals, Packers, Buccaneers, Cowboys.
I put the Bucs as number one.
I would, yes.
You know, again, I respect Green Bay, but, you know, I said to Drew Brees the other day, and I know I've said on the radio, like, I have the feel that the Bucs are kind of, I think I said it to you even last week, they're kind of just coasting.
They totally get the feeling that they've got the foot on the
gas. They know how good they are.
And if they need to hit it,
they'll hit it when they got to hit it. And when the playoffs come around, they'll be ready to another level. That's just the way I feel about it. Maybe I'm going to be wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've seen this through my years of being obsessed with football where, you know, the great team can get a little complacent. We won the Super Bowl the year before. Oh, it's December. We'll start to put our foot on the gas pedal here. And, of course, they did a lot of great things in the first half. Just missed some opportunities in the second half and had a great player do insane things. Insane. I mean, again, Josh Allen,
throwing the ball, running the ball, insane.
Second half was terrific, yeah, to see what he did. I want to get your thought on the first half, though,
yeah,
because as incredible as it was a week ago to watch that game in the extreme wind, to watch Mac Jones hand off, and just basically never pass at all in the second or third quarter,
right,
I thought it was even more startling that Buffalo's running backs didn't have a single rushing attempt in the first half.
Insane. It's shocking. You know, Josh Allen had a few runs. We know that. They had the quarterback design runs. But, yeah.
How do you make sense of that?
It's hard to make sense of it. I mean, as far as no runs at all. Again, Tampa has a stigma a little right now. Like, we can't block their D-line. We're not going to be able to really run. And but teams are turning on film and going, but you can throw on them.
Yeah.
So they're going a little bit like, why waste our time really trying to run? And I think Buffalo fell into that trap a little. And let alone they know they're not good at running the ball.
Do you think it would have been a waste of time if let's say that they ran one time, it was four passes in one run.
No.
Or three passes in one run, even if it's just for 2 yards. Like, I don't think that's a waste of time.
I don't either. I'm with you. Again, right play, right situation, whatever. It doesn't even matter about what you get. It's like we talk about all the time. Attempts are an important thing.
Yeah.
Attempts just make a Devin White or a Levante David bite up on that run fake a little bit when you do a play action out of the shotgun.
Yeah.
Or at least pause a little bit from just going back into coverage every time.
Right.
Because they go, wait, oh, they ran for five off the edge here. I can't totally leave my run game responsibility.
As an example, a game we already talked about, I mean, Joe Burrow finally finding a lot more success getting the ball in the end zone in the second half, in the fourth quarter in particular. I think it had something to do with, maybe a lot to do with, Joe Mixon had 18 carries.
Yeah, of course.
Was it getting a lot out of him?
No, but it
just, at least the defense had to consider it.
Exactly right. It leads to other big plays. You got to make that sacrifice, again, to bring up the second level of defenses to where they can't always be thinking pass, drop back, take away the middle of the field. And as we've discussed before, there's no greater way of creating big plays than the play action pass, and that's really the biggest reason you do it.
I think we've got one Josh Allen here, Pete. Correct, the Tampa Bay defensive line getting a lot of pressure on him and sacking him. I think this is early in the game.
They're overwhelmed early in the game.
Big time.
I mean, overwhelmed. I mean, yeah, you watched the game back. You watched it live.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a free-for-all. It was a free-for-all. I mean, it was every play. I mean, Jim Nance is announcing the game, and when he finally threw a throw from a clean pocket, like, past halfway through the second quarter, he's, whoa, Allen, he actually had a chance to step in and throw that one.
Yeah.
That's the first time he's had a chance today. I mean, that's where it was at. It's crazy. But this play here, you know, they're going to blitz the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're bringing this guy off the edge. So you got that, right? You know, here. All right, let me see if I get them all right. Either way, Josh Allen makes the correct call with the line here. All right? He makes the correct call. Let me just make sure I got this right because, again, I got 9 million plays going through my head, and I just want to make sure I got the specifics right. All right? So he makes the correct call. He probably knew that this guy might blitz, right? And that means this guy will drop out. So it's these four down linemen and then the one pass rusher. So what does he do? He has a call where this left tackle stays on the left defense end. That's Tryon, Joe Tryon. And then the rest of these guys are all going to kick out to the next guy, all right? They're all going to kick out. And the problem here is number 79, who really struggled, Esther Brown.
Yeah, Spencer.
Spencer Brown, he struggled in the first half. And not only physically, but this is struggling mentally a little bit, right? So you see, I mean, there you go. They're blitzing off the edge, all right? And with them blitzing off the edge, they're all going a gap this way, right? So that guy blocks that guy. This guy blocks that guy. This guy blocks that guy. And this guy should come out and take the guy off the edge. And that doesn't happen. And you'll see here as Josh Allen drops back, he thinks he's protected. So that's why he's not looking. He's going, wait, I called the perfect protection. I'm getting exactly what I wanted, right? I'm one-on-one with Diggs on the left side, and he's probably going to hit Diggs, who runs a curl route. He's going to probably throw it and get a completion. But instead he gets killed. And you'll see Spencer Brown, he realizes he's messed up here just as I'm going to press play here to realize, oh, no, I didn't get out there. And why am I helping my friend who's blocking this guy perfectly fine anyways, right? And there you go, off the edge, sack. And, you know, again, you could see, I have a hard time thinking this ball isn't going to go to Diggs right here, you know, who's open downfield on a pretty easy just curl route. But that's what Josh Allen was dealing with in the first half.
In the second half, do you think the Buccaneer defense let up a little bit because they had that big lead?
I expected, again, to watch the film and go, well, maybe they changed stuff up, like Buffalo's defense. I thought maybe it didn't change. It's just, hey, Brady missed some throws and right. missed that opportunity. The second half, I thought, well, we're going to see the Bucs really back off here. They're not going to do blitzes and plays like that. But no, it didn't. It just, the magic show got greater because mm-hmm. he just went, fuck, I'm going to put the pedal to the metal and just make every play in the world.
Yeah.
They ran the ball a little bit. His quarterback design runs were effective. And then they called more of a game that I think was conscious of getting the ball out of his hand a little quicker in the second half, too. To where, okay, we don't know where it's going to come, but we're going to release guys free and just get it out of his hand. Okay, we got 5 yards. Here we go, next play. And I think that was really the thing I took away more than anything.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
You're all warmed up now and ready for the important bridge part of the show.
Oh, baby.
It gets us to the second half.
I mean, come on. I mean, we are supported by Under Armour, just like Steph Curry is.
Hey,
and I want to pay props. Steph Curry love.
It's cool last night.
Came here to New York, MSG, all-time record breaker, three-point field goals, amazing. And, like, oh, my gosh, like obliteration of this record when it's all said and done. Uh-huh. He's 32.
I was just going to say, it feels like he still has a bunch of years left.
This is a record that's going to be unattainable, I think, by anybody in the NBA for a long, long time.
Agreed.
It's just so ahead of his time in the game. It really is. It's like a, I don't even know what great players to say. You know, whether it's a Michael Jordan or a Babe Ruth or a Jim Brown, where it's like they're game changers. They're like 10 or 15 years ahead of the game as far as what they do to it. But just like Steph Curry, we are supported by Under Armour. And just like us, Under Armour wants to give you an edge. They are focused on performing better and taking their game to the next level. Everything from running shoes that propel you forward to hoop shoes that give you insane grip. Yeah, like these cool ones I got on my feet right now. They even make hoodies that reflect energy. We're not just about the end result, winning or glory. Under Armour's about the hard work, the dedication, the cycle of training, competing, and recovering. We give you advantages, but not shortcuts. The only way is through.
There you go. Did you get one of those hoodies yet?
I think there is one back here.
Okay.
I think I got it. I think it came in today. I haven't checked out the package yet, but I believe that's what I got there. So I'm going to sport it.
I think I need to know how that one works.
I will. I'll let you know. Yeah.
How were you shooting threes in high school?
I was good.
Step back and hit them?
Oh, yeah. I was a three-point shooter. Yeah.
Oh, that was the main part of your game.
That's what I was. No doubt about it. Yes. I mean.
30%? 40%?
That's a good question. I was one of the state leaders in three-pointers.
I
wasn't like number one or two, but I was up there.
So like in any given game, you're going to knock down like three or four?
Oh, without a doubt. I had games where I knocked down 12.
12 threes?
Knocked down, seven or eight a few games.
For real?
For real, yeah. Yeah, we were a good team.
Was the boxing one illegal in New Jersey?
Well, that's why I was being able to shoot. We had a Division I center.
Worried about him.
Yeah, so they were worried about him, and he wasn't selfish. So if they collapsed on him, he'd kick it out to me, and I'd get to shoot it. And then we had a point guard who was a Division I safety running back for Boston College. So, for a bunch of white boys, we could play ball. We could play ball a little bit. We couldn't mess with, like, the Saint, the great teams in New Jersey. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
I'm blanking on Bobby Hurley's St. Anne's. Like, we couldn't mess with them.
Yeah.
But for public schools, we were pretty damn good.
Dozen threes. Damn. Respect.
It was a good day. It was a good day. I think I had 39. It was like 12 threes and
Did you hit like three free throws?
A few free throws, I got. That was about it. But it was just spotted up and shoo.
I would enjoy talking hoops with you for the next 20 minutes to half hour.
We got more football to hit on.
Back to football, AFC West. Hey, the Chiefs, remember when we were talking about them with a losing record and being last in the AFC West?
Right.
Feels like a little while ago. 6 wins in a row. Didn't even break a sweat, 48-9 over the Las Vegas Raiders. The defense struggling mightily there in Vegas. Need a couple of examples there of Patrick Mahomes getting it done.
Yeah, well, I mean – the Raiders are that team that's too basic. It's just too basic. It's this is what we do. We're not going to mess it up. Okay, well, you are going to mess it up because they know what you're going to do, and they're going to expose your rules. And that's what they do. The Chiefs are protecting better. So guys like Crosby and Ngakoue couldn't even get close to Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes wasn't like, oh, wow, an amazing game. But it still was good. And it was efficient. Exactly right. It was efficient. It really was from that standpoint. And again, what I'll say about the Chiefs is I would like them to continue to run the ball and run the ball more.
Yep.
You know, you got too much invested in that O-line. They're too good. Teams are still relying on playing pass defense against you. Let's use the full capacity of those assets that you've used on your offensive line. I'd like to see them do that more. But it is better, and it's been at least a little bit more efficient on that side of the ball.
Big time.
And they're, you know, for the most part, starting to limit the dumb mistakes on offense. But every time I say that, then the next week they come out and dumb mistakes show up again. Mm. Defense is the story of the show. That's the real deal.
And
but the offense
did
some, yeah, we're going to get there. But the offense did some real good things.
How about one, like, you know, perfect snapshot of the Raiders defense being a little too easy and the Chiefs exploiting it?
Yeah, here we go. And in the game, it's basic. You know, it's Seattle cover three, or it's man-to-man. And maybe they sprinkled in two or three snaps of quarters coverage. But for the most part, it's Seattle cover three. Gus Bradley invented it. That's what he does. And again, I don't have a problem with Seattle cover three, but you got to have, like, legit talent to do that now. The league has gotten used to this scheme. They know it. They know the rules. They know how to expose it. So his curveball is this right here, which is man-to-man, all right? It's man-to-man, and, of course, it's not special. It's not. I mean, you see, you got man, you got man, you got man, you got man there on Kelsey. And then Littleton is playing the back, man-to-man. Now, first off, as you can see here, Littleton's on the right side of the center here right now, all right? So that's an issue. I mean, I'm sure they've seen this on film. And Mahomes knows, oh, man, if I send this guy out anywhere over here, how are they going to get him over there? So what do? They call a little play that's like pick plays. And Littleton can't get over there. And now Darrell Williams is running up the sidelines, and he's wide open. He's going to score a touchdown. You know, to me, again, man-to-man's fine. But you can't play man-to-man in this alignment. Not with a stack splits, too, with, like, receiver in a tight split, Kelsey in a tight split. You know, that screams they might pick us here. I mean, it screams it.
Yeah.
Right. So either Littleton's got to get out here and be, like, head up so he can get through the traffic and then just be there to when they throw him the ball or they don't throw him the ball because you're there. Or there has to be some sort of call made where you go, like, you know, I know defenses have these calls. Ray Lewis, he looks at Ed Reed because he knows they're in a formation with it, and they make some call to go like, hey, if this happens, you know, hey, you know, 25, I can't remember who 25 is. 25, you take Darrell Williams, and now I'll take your responsibility of Kelsey, right? You make some call or call to switch it off there because you go, you're in a compromising position, all right? And as we go here, you'll see, I mean, come on. Does it get any easier?
No.
I mean, look at that. I mean, there's Littleton. He's responsible for Williams. He's going, oh, my gosh, this is going to be one of the easiest touchdown passes of my career.
Accidentally picked,
right. Kelsey does a good job of acting like he's breaking down to run some sort of route. And, of course, there you go. Doesn't – Trayvon Moehrig, sorry about that. 25 is Trayvon Moehrig. But you see what I'm saying here. Again, you just can't line up like this and think you're going to be able to stop this play. It's unrealistic. I mean, it's unrealistic for Corey Littleton. He's in a bad spot. He's on every highlight show in America because their coaches put him in a bad spot.
Right.
And now it's just, it's easy pickings, easy livings. But either he's got to be in a different spot or there has to be that call made that I talked about with Trayvon Moehrig to go, all right, wait, let's switch it off. I got Kelsey. If they come inside, I'll take Kelsey.
Right.
You get outside and take my responsibility over there. And that's just where the Raiders are too predictable.
And because the Raiders scored only 9 points, how about two examples of the Chiefs' defense getting after it here?
I mean, the Chiefs' defense are becoming one of my favorite watches in football.
Think about that. I mean, back in September.
I know.
You weren't going to say that.
I was not going to say that. You know, we saw mid-October Washington football team in Washington. I know we broke that down on the Wednesday
And we show, I said, look, they changed this week. They went to in your face. And they made Heinicke throw some balls away, and he got sacked and whatever else. You know, the Tennessee game the week after, they stopped Derrick Henry. It was 29 rushes for like 80-something yards. You know, Mahomes and the offense were horrible.
Right.
It's been good since about mid-October. And the first thing is, right now.
That was the last time they lost, I think.
It was at Tennessee. Isn't that crazy?
I know.
And that's the last time they lost.
Yeah.
And it's not because of their offense. It's because of their defense right now. Offenses, we know, can be dangerous, but their defense is dangerous. It's legit dangerous. They're healthy on the D-line. Melvin Ingram has helped out. Chris Jones going back to defensive tackle. And number 55, Frank Clark, after having some issues early in the season and offseason, has just, he's exploded the last few weeks. Where every game I turn on, I go, man, Frank Clark is kicking some ass.
Might
over
lead
here.
The league in your favorite stat?
I mean, he's not leading it, because the first guy we're going to talk about is probably leading it. All right. Chris Jones is right now the master of the fuck the playoff. Hey, plain and simple here. It's first and 10. Just watch this guy right here. This is Melvin Ingram on the edger, okay, on the edge of the line of scrimmage. I mean, it's just going to be Chris Jones dominating Alex Leatherwood, first-round pick out of Alabama, and just absolutely getting all over Derek Carr. Melvin Ingram's going to come right behind him and join in on the fun, because he's like, wait, let me hit this guy too. This is fun. If this is going to be this easy, all right? And as you see here, there goes Chris Jones, who unfortunately is not playing this week. And I will tell you, I would argue he's the best player on both teams right now.
Wow.
That's how good Chris Jones is. I know Mahomes and Herbert are in this game, but Chris Jones is as good as anybody else on the field. He really is. He's as dominant on the defensive side of the ball as anybody in the game right now. He really is that way. You know, Aaron Donald's the only defensive tackle you can, you know, put up next to him as far as just dominating people, messing plays up. But you see here, Derek Carr gets to the top. I mean, he gets to the top of his drop, and it's like, well, what do you want me to do? What am I supposed to do? He wants to step up in the pocket, but then there goes Melvin Ingram, who came underneath Chris Jones, as you see, and it's just over right there. Boom. And it's a lot like we talked about with Josh Allen and the Bills. I mean, they just absolutely dominated the Raiders' offensive line, overwhelmed them with their physicality, their scheme, everything. And it was a total, total ass-whooping.
And I think on this same drive, kind of a same kind of thing, speaking of ass-whooping.
Yeah, another ass-whooping, right? And
third
what
and
I want to show here, too, is just like how cool they are with what they do. Now, again, you're going to see a pretty good pass rush, okay? That's the star of the show right now is their pass rush, all right? And I just want to get back just to where you can see everything here, all right? And yeah, you're going to see everybody's going to kind of get up here and get in their face. There's going to be four rushers. But this is where Kansas City's really cool, all right? And this is where when they are got a lead and they get you in these positions, this is old Kansas City. Oh, now I can do crazy stuff. We got a little lead. And the lead, of course, is going to get greater to where they don't have to worry about the run game as much and everything. But watch what they're going to do here, Paul. This is Tampa 2. They're going to play Tampa 2 out of this look right here.
Doesn't look like
it. Yeah, it doesn't look like it. But there's a cornerback here who's going to act as the safety. You can see his shadow.
15 yards off,
15 yards off, right. Here's the other corner, Hughes, who's playing safety in this play. Here's your Tampa 2, Fenton down the middle, dropping middle linebacker. Okay? And then they're going to go Sorensen out in the flat to be the cover 2 corner. Thornhill out in the flat to be the other cover 2 corner, and then you're going to have these two guys in the middle of the field as your Will and Sam linebacker, because Fenton's the Mike linebacker and a Tampa 2 going down the middle, right? So watch this on play. It's pretty cool. And again, we talk about being deceptive on defense.
Yeah.
You want to dominate them up front.
Yeah.
We don't know who's blitzing and who's coming and who's dropping, right? They're doing everything we talk about every week on the podcast to go, you want to confuse a quarterback and make life miserable? This is the shit you do.
Yeah.
And you're going to see here, there you go. You see them dropping out. And that's what it is.
I haven't seen that.
I know. They do
Have
it.
You?
They do this. They will. That's a different way in which they've done it. I will say that. But they are very creative in getting to their Tampa 2s. And really, hey, Tampa 2, at the end of the day, you know, because you could go, well, maybe this is cover 3 or something. Tampa 2 is 3 deep, 4 under. That's what it is. It's 3 deep, 4 under, you know. Cover 3 is still 3 deep, 4 under. except you have a safety in the middle instead of the dropping middle linebacker. A lot of the rules could be the same way here, but they also know it's a 17-yard third and 17. They're not worried about putting the corners down here and stopping a flat route for 2 yards. They're going to get a little depth, and then they're going to get the pressure on Carr, make him get the ball out of his hand short, and they're going to rally and make the tackle. It's third and 17. They'll give you the 6 or 7 yard completion. Yeah. They don't care. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Wow.
They're kicking butt.
It's impressive.
They're kicking butt. They really are. They're fun to watch on the defensive side of the ball.
Setting up that they're one game up on the L.A. Chargers in the AFC West. Just so happens it's Kansas City and L.A. coming up this weekend. Our friends at PointsBet are going to help us take a peek here.
Amazing.
Kansas City -3 at Los Angeles. This is without Jones. What do you think of that number?
Jones is a game changer. -3.
Games in L.A.?
It's in L.A. I think this is a coin flip game.
Yeah.
I do. You know, I look at it like this way, too. Again, the Chiefs are going to have to run the ball in this one, in my opinion. You know, the passing game's not hitting on all cylinders, even though Mahomes is better. I'm not sold that it's going to just dissect and be surgical. Chargers can play some pass defense. They can. And they're creative, too. And like we saw, you know, Brandon Staley's got Vic Fangio background, which we've seen Denver be able to defend Kansas City and limit Tyreek Hill. And he's got a little Wade Phillips, too. So he's going to have some outside-the-box creative things he does on the defensive side of the ball. Again, they got a lot of pass rushers. They don't got great run stoppers. Mm. Can Kansas City run the ball? I don't know. That's going to be one of the big questions of the football game.
Chargers beat the Chiefs in Kansas City.
I know.
It was back in week 3.
Right.
With this,
fourth
as
down
much progress
right.
as Kansas City's made defensively. Like, is that game worth watching as they get ready for this one now in mid to late December?
It's worth watching. You might be able to get, you know, a few tells here and there, but it's one of those where you watch and go, okay, like I remember some of the rules we had that game, but this is a different defense now. Like, I'm not going to put too many eggs into that matchup. They're doing things a little different. The personnel's a little different. They're playing at a much higher level. Now, Kansas City, they'll have to be careful about doing some of that disguise stuff and all that against this group. They'll have answers, and of course we know as of late, you know, the Chargers and Herbert are pushing the ball down the football field a little bit.
We're going to see that in a bit. Yeah.
I really was leaning Kansas City all the way here, but with no Chris Jones, I think it really does become a coin flip football game. I got to pick my games tomorrow on the podcast. I'm probably still going to pick Kansas City.
Mm.
I think I probably will.
I had you the other way.
I know. I think I will. I think I'm going to chicken out just because it's Kansas City and the Chargers aren't necessarily battle-tested yet. I got to see them maybe win one of these gotta-have-it type games against the Kings
of the
AFC first.
Over-under is 52. Initially, you're like, oh, these two quarterbacks have put up more than 52.
I know. That's a little scary to me. That's a high number. That is a high number.
It is a big number.
With teams that know what the other teams do, that's where it can be tricky with divisional matchups. You go, both offenses can do special things, but both defenses are pretty creative in the defensive side of the ball, will understand some of the rules of that offense, to where if we got away and you told me this game was 23-20, I would go, I could see that.
Yeah.
52 is a little high for me.
I'll take the Chargers and the under.
You'll take the Chargers and the under.
Which means it's a slam dunk that the Chiefs are going to win 45-30.
Nah, I don't see that. I'm going to go Chiefs and the under.
Okay.
All right? So that's
– We're both on the
under.
We're
both on that. If I win, you owe me $10 next week on the podcast.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Unless you change your mind tonight and go with the Chargers
tomorrow
with Mike.
Yes.
Right?
You're right. Yes. I'll let you know. I'll text you if I change my mind.
All right. Over to the NFC.
Yep.
Quick trip through here. Cowboys win again, 27-20. Three-game lead in the NFC East, 4 to go. I mean, they're doing just fine there. People who are concerned that Dak has been a little lesser than they want him to be, what would you say?
Well, I would say, first off, has he been lesser? Yes. Is he a little off? Okay, yeah, he's not quite as sharp as he was early in the year. I also think he set a bar that was insane early in the year.
Yeah.
I mean, insane. He was playing out of his mind. Their offense was rolling. He was playing amazing on a weekly basis, so we just thought, he'll continue to play amazing. He's not playing bad right now. I don't sit here and watch film, you know, the last 2 weeks and go, oh, man, he's missing plays and throws everywhere. You know, what I would say a little bit, too, to add to that is, you know, early in the year when he was amazing and rolling, their run game was amazing and rolling, too.
Yeah.
So they were getting a lot of basic passing looks and things that would go, hey, we can strike in the passing game here. Now people are not as afraid of their run game.
And their passing game is not overly complicated. It's got all your good basic plays. But you get to this time of the year, teams have seen these plays a lot, and they know how to defend them, and they know how to tweak little game plans to take away certain things. And I think so if I add that no run game, him being a little off, and people having caught on to a few of their schemes of that, that has led to some less than Dak type performances that we've become used to.
If you don't mind me asking, show us a little bit of that from their touchdown win over the football team on Sunday.
Yeah, let's do that. I mean, Dallas's defense whooped ass. I mean, it must be a theme of the day, I guess, for this, because between them, Kansas City, the Bucs, those were ass whoopings on that side of the ball. What I want to show here with Dak Prescott specifically is his mechanics. This is something that rears its ugly head every now and then with Dak Prescott. And just stay on me here for a second, Kristen or Pete, because I've had this conversation with Dak Prescott. He can fall into the bad habit every now and then of he's in the throwing position and he locks his front knee out as he's going to throw the ball like that. Nobody does that. Nobody locks their front knee. You watch a Brady or a Rodgers, again, it's going to be the side of the foot kind of going towards the target, and it's going to be rotate on it, and your leg always has a little bend to it.
Right.
He will get to a position where it's like this, and I know they got a table in front of me, but that front leg will lock out. And then what happens is, anybody who's watched the podcast, again, you want the throwing motion to be thinking coming around more than up to down, right? And again, you watch Rodgers warm up, he does this. You watch Brady warm up, he does this. Because again, you want to throw a ball hard that way, the body's got to go that way, not this way. That's not going to make the ball go. So he's got that double whammy going on. Lock the front leg out, and then that's making his motion become really vertical over the top. And you'll see here on this throw, his arm is follow through, ends up at the opposite pocket, which is not ideal.
I'm just watching you do that. That leads to overthrows.
Overthrows. It could go either way, where the ball goes up high, or at times you're going to throw the dirt ball at somebody's foot if you don't quite have the release the right way. You might be aiming like to hit the guy in the belly button. But now because I've locked my knee out and I'm coming over the top that way, it goes lower than expected. So let's watch number four. He's going to throw a ball down the left seam here, crossing route. That's going to get intercepted to Collins in the back end. Collins playing safety here, and I think he's going to throw this ball to CeeDee Lamb, right, going across the middle. Yep, so here you go. You see CeeDee, right? CeeDee's coming across. He's attempting a very difficult throw. Again, it's hard. You got to throw this ball over this guy, and then he wants to put enough pace to get it underneath that guy.
Yeah.
If anything, I'd go, hey, just wait a second. Let him get it, over here and then throw it, and you got a window over here. Let him clear it. But what we really want to show here is I want you to see if you can really tell with Dax. Now, I got another clip in a minute that I'm going to show you that shows it a little bit more clearly here. But here, just everybody watch this in real time. Again, his front foot that you're supposed to be going towards the target and stepping to goes backwards on release, okay? That's what I mean. Watch this foot. It's going to go slide backwards, all right? And then you hear me talk about the release, right? You see the release here, all right? Watch how it's so over the top, and his arm comes down to his belt buckle or, his zipper. I mean, that's not ideal for throwing the ball accurately or with power. But that, to me, is the weird thing. This foot, watch this foot right here. It literally slides back as he throws the ball. And that, to me, I don't know anybody in football that does that. And then you see the ball come out of his hand wobbly.
Ball took off high right away.
And pay attention. The quality of the football will tell you a lot of things sometimes, too. You can see it's wobbly. It's not a real tight spiral. Easy interception. So this is I've seen this the last few weeks.
More interceptions and touchdowns the last 2 weeks, which, for someone with his experience, that really jumps out to you.
It does jump out to me. Yeah. Really, ever since the Denver game, again, I don't want to say it's bad, but he's missed throws where I go, man, Dak never misses that, and he missed this.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy to me. And I'm going to show the one more clip here because there's another one I think that'll even show it even more. He's going to let's get it going here. He's going to throw to Ezekiel Elliott coming out of the backfield, okay? But again, what I want everybody to watch here is the front foot and just how over the top of it it is again. Again, Pete, show me, or Kristen, show me on the screen again. You know, there he is, first off, and this he's going to throw the ball, and this foot's going to go like that. I don't know anybody that does that or how you can make that successful. And it's going to be hard to be accurate that way, too, let alone he never really gets his body to the target. He stays, like, right down the field the whole time. So that's not easy either. I mean, you're never getting yourself over to on this plane to where you want to throw the ball. You know, again, he's on the clock. He's going to throw to 2 o'clock or 1:30, but he steps till 12 o'clock. That's not going to lead to great accuracy either. But the big thing is, and I'm going to be slow motion, watch this front leg go backwards as he throws it. All right? So here we go. Slow motion. Here goes the pass rush. Look at this. Doesn't really step into it, and it goes backwards on release. I mean, that to me is weird. I think anybody would say that. I mean, not really a step into the throw either. Not really. Just kind of having like your feet there planted, and your motion with your lower leg is to go backwards.
Why do you think he's doing that?
I don't know. It's always been a little bit of a bad habit of his. He's discussed this with me even on my podcast maybe 2 years ago at the Super Bowl.
You see some quarterbacks, like I watch Rodgers sometimes, and he'll snap through it, and in his follow-through while he's watching, he immediately starts to back up.
Right.
Like some quarterbacks will get through it, and then it just feels natural to go backward. It looks like he's getting to the backward part of it
too early.
A couple counts too
early. Right. Rodgers will get it and go –
And then
kind of
fighting
back that way because he's got his weight on the backside, but he gets through it.
Yeah.
And then kind of because he just doesn't get all the way to this position, he fades back a little bit. And Rodgers, he's so gifted, he errs on staying on the back foot all the time and just doing that or doing that. But, you know, it's something, Dak, you know, is aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, what I want to go is I see you doing all these – you know, this, right?
Yeah.
That's what you do in pregame. Oh, that's not that.
No.
That is not that. And to me, that's, you know, hopefully somebody can point that out. I'm sure he realizes it, and I bet you he fixes it before the playoffs get here.
And he's in the position, his team is in the position where he can figure it out. They have that giant cushion in the NFC East.
Yeah.
So the postseason's coming. We'll see if he gets better before they get there.
That's right.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
I want to see a little bit of Micah Parsons.
Don't we all?
His highlights haven't gotten old yet. So, I mean, quarters 1 through 4, you kind of have a number of picks. So where are we going here to highlight how well he's playing?
Well, he's just everywhere. You know, I said on Football Night in America, it's reminds me of Lawrence Taylor as far as the skill set. I'm not saying he's Lawrence Taylor yet. I mean, I think the world of Lawrence Taylor. The whole Sims family does, of course. And Lawrence Taylor is like the freakiest of the freaks. Kind of goes back to like the Steph Curry conversation.
Yeah.
Lawrence Taylor is a guy that was like 20 years ahead of his time. Playing against the guys in the mid-80s going like, I'm the 2006 linebacker, but I'm playing you guys now. They sent me back from the future to whoop all your asses. I mean, that's literally what Lawrence Taylor was. All right, well, this is the beauty of what, like, the Cowboys do. First off, they're healthy on the defensive line like we talk about. They got ass kickers. They got depth. They got everything. You got, you know, you got five. This is the beauty of what Dan Quinn did here, and this is really smart because this guy – against a tailback and pass protection is going to be an issue. Now, how do you ensure he gets on a tailback? Well, what they do is they have five defensive linemen in the game. It's Gregory, you know, it's, I believe this is Neville Gallimore. There's DeMarcus Lawrence. Here's another defensive tackle, and that's Terrell Basham. So within that, you have five pass rushers, Paul. And what does Washington want to do? They want to make sure they get their five O linemen on the five defensive linemen, right? That's common rule within the NFL. But the problem is the best pass rusher on the team is the stand-up middle linebacker. Mm. So now he's going to be one-on-one with Gibson. So it's really smart as far as how they game plan that all together, right? And that's where it's beautiful that way. And you're going to see him now come across. Parsons is going to come right up the gap, which leads Gibson, okay, one-on-one with him. And then Randy Gregory's going to drop out. Terrell Basham's going to drop out. And now it becomes really a one, a two, a three, and a four-man rush, like we talk about all the time. We love to see that stuff. But because of the five linemen in the game, that's why they – five defensive linemen, I should say, why and how they got him matched up on a back. And that's where I say he's going to be a game changer because teams are going to have to rethink about how they're going to pass protect. Because as long as any back is going against Micah Parsons, he's going to run them over, or because they're worried about getting run over, all right, they're going to then plant their feet in the ground. He's going to use his quickness like he does here to kind of get on the edge of you, right? Because, again, he's 248 pounds. Gibson's going, oh, no, I got to get ready for a car crash. And Micah Parsons can see him kind of settling down and getting a wide base, and he goes, well, his feet have stopped now, so I'm going to make a move and go around him. And I think this is a defensive front we're going to continue to see from Dallas. You know, one, because of the Micah Parsons mismatch, but two, with guys like Basham and DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory, like they can rush or drop back or do everything. You know, they're so athletic that way. And that's where, and 96 is in the middle right there. 96, I want to say, I'm going to blank on his name, Pete, but you're going to have to tell me in his ear. 96 on the Cowboys. But that's what you're going to do. And because of their Neville Gallimore is the 96, I believe. That's where I'm messing that up. You know, but that's where they're going to cause problems for defenses going forward, is this defensive front, this personnel on the field, and because they have athletes at the defensive end position, it's going to allow them to be a little versatile with you drop, you blitz, or, you know, you blitz, you drop. Or maybe they end up starting to, you know, put Micah Parsons out here. And now it's, oh, now it's Basham over here. Because they realize, wait, they're using, you know, they're trying to cheat and find a different way to block Micah Parsons. They're going to cause mismatches across the board. It's one of the beauty of what they do. And, of course, he's a freak show. This guy right here, number 11, freak show.
One more game before we get into the play of the day, Browns. And to me, this, I mean, it was obviously a giant win over Baltimore. Only one game back of the Ravens now in the AFC North after they won 24-22. Offense, I mean, the points were there, and then the points weren't there for the Cleveland, for the Browns offensively.
Yeah, right.
Baker said they got conservative. What'd you see?
I will throw the challenge flag on that completely. I mean, I really will. You know, listen, they did some good things early on, had some good drives. Defense played great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they set them up for some success in the first half for sure. You know, they were a pain in the butt. But I don't really know how he could come away and say it's conservative, right? I mean, it's 17 to nothing, I believe, right? And they come out throwing on first down. He throws an interception. Mm. Bad throw, too. Guy's open. Jarvis Landry's open. 15-yard out route, he's open. He throws it 3 or 4 yards behind the guy, you know? Now, even at 17 to 3, they continue to throw the football and do some things. But now, 24 to 6, it's second and 6. He pump fakes on a double move, holds the ball too long, almost fumbles. I mean, they called a double move. That's not being aggressive. That's not being like conservative. And, you know, from all accounts, after you've thrown an interception up 17 to nothing, Kevin Stefanski had all the rights in the world to go, I'm going to be conservative here. He did not do that. So that's where I look at it as a little bit of BS to say that, all right? You know, 24 to 9, you know, came out throwing on a first and 10 to Peoples Jones. First and 10, 13-yard gain. Like, that's not being conservative.
Right.
Followed by three more throws right after it. Four more throws right after it. Right? So that's where I don't get that. That was that drive. Then, yeah, the same drive, he has a completion to Landry for 17 yards and got them down there. And I think that's where they didn't get the field goal. They miss a field goal at 24-9. You know, Baltimore goes down, scores a touchdown, makes it 24-15, and they throw the ball three straight times in the next series.
Doesn't sound that conservative.
Not at all. And that's where
it sounds not productive.
Well, that sounds like, I don't know why you say that, or you're causing problems within your locker room and your team, but you're going to say that when that's just not the facts. And, man, you put Stefanski in a bad spot because we are in the age of when people just say something, we just go, oh, that must be – they got conservative. Let's run with that.
Right.
And I want to go, no, challenge flag. I just watched the game back. It wasn't conservative at all. In fact, it was fairly aggressive, I would say, for the circumstance they were in at that point.
And we'll see if Stefanski's around to coach this weekend. Tested positive for COVID this week, right?
Yeah, today. Him, Baker as well. So, I mean, they got COVID big time. A few offensive linemen, Austin Hooper. They're playing a Saturday game this week against the Raiders. Big game for both teams still. Raiders are still in this thing. They're not out of it yet. This will be big if some of those guys can't get back. And, you know, the Saturday game certainly hurts them because it lessens their chance of getting those two negative tests.
Two hammers here coming up here to put a close on things, put a wrap on it with the play of the fucking day.
Yeah.
Plays of the fucking day. We have two of them.
Yep.
And who said arm strength didn't matter?
Yeah, that's not going to hold up on the plays of the fucking day.
You don't hear that at this desk. Let's first check in with Justin Herbert. And I can't see this play enough.
Yeah, well,
it's not very often you see a quarterback throw at 65-plus in a game.
No, I mean, it's insane what he does. I mean, first off, he's insane. And it's not even like the most special play in the world or anything of that. The Giants are playing cover two. You got Cook on the shallow cross. This receiver's going to run like a corner route. And you got Palmer just right down the middle, and it's not Tampa 2. It's a true cover 2. So these guys are looking for crossers or shorter routes. They're not going to have that guy running down the middle of the field. And it's a little bit of like what we saw last week against Cincinnati. You know, hey, little pressure. Wait, I don't need to just stand there and be a robot in the pocket. Let me get out because I got great movement ability. And he sets up from his own 33, 34-yard line. And, I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? 65-yard throw.
On the money.
On the money to Guyton. Ooh, I said it was Palmer, excuse me. On the money. And, yeah, they're in a tough spot here. You know, again, this safety down here was worried about this corner route. All right? Or that's the corner at this point. The safety was worried about this corner route originally. He wanted the backside safety to come help him to get there, and the backside safety was too late, as you could see. Right, so that frontside safety had to worry about that corner route, and then the backside safety, who's Logan Ryan in this case, he's got to get back to help. So this will paint the picture a little bit better, as you see here.
How much you blame the Giants here for not defending this?
Well, like they're trying to take away a lot. Now, again, I don't think it's Tampa 2. If it's Tampa 2, then Tay Crowder is completely wrong, and that's his mess up. But you know, again, when you watch film, you got to take evidence of other things too. The safety over here, when he sees this outbreaking route, he recognizes that Guyton's running up the middle. He's calling for Logan Ryan to get over. He is, and you're just going to have to take my word for it because you can't see it here. But they're trying to take away crossers, in cut behind it, right, by not playing the Tampa 2 because we showed earlier, Tampa 2, that's how Cincinnati kind of screwed over the 49ers, is those in cuts. So they're trying to take that away, and as you see here, he's going down the middle of the field, and I want to see, we might get it, all right? I want you to watch, look, right there. See that? Mm. See that little point here? I believe that's Xavier McKinney here, number 29, out here. He's going to point to Logan Ryan because he's got to get over there to try to stop this. It's not an easy ask. It's not an easy ask, and you might go, why? Because if this guy went straight, he's gone. So he's got to respect this a little bit, and he's trying to read him and read the quarterback eyes and demeanor all at the same time. He's in a tough spot. This is kind of a crack the code type of play, right? And you see there, it's too late reacting, and it's just an unbelievable throw.
And there aren't that many quarterbacks who are even going to try and throw that post at that point.
No, that's like, let's go through the list. We can simplify that real quick.
Stafford, we'll see in a minute.
Stafford in a minute. Mahomes, Allen, Rodgers.
Wilson?
Maybe. Russell probably would, too. You're right. He can launch it out there.
Yeah.
I'd probably put that. That's about the class
might
of it right there.
It.
Yeah. I mean, Brady can launch it that far.
Yeah.
I do. Now, he doesn't get out of the pocket and do those type of things anymore. You know, that's never been his game. But, man, Brady can still launch it. I'll give him that for sure.
And back to L.A., Matt Stafford.
Yeah.
Downfield again. I want to point out, too, 23 out of 30, 287. Those are the kind of numbers he was putting up routinely in September and October before they kind of took a couple steps back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think they got back to who they were over the last few weeks. You know, one, they didn't screw the game up early on in the game to take them out of their game plan, right? I mean, we saw the Titans game, the 49ers game. I mean, they had early turnovers and interceptions that just was like, okay, now you're down 14-0. I mean, you can't be patient with the run. You know, these last two games against Jacksonville and Arizona, they've been able to get underneath the center and run the football more and do that. So it's made them a better team. And, you know, their stars showed up in the game the other night. Stars showed up. You're built on stars. Your stars got to show up. They got to play like stars.
Right.
And they did that. Donald was awesome. Floyd was awesome. Beckham, Cooper, Kupp, Van Jefferson, Stafford are awesome. And, hey, this is – I feel like we show this play like every other week. It's post over the top, crosser, right? It's all it is. It's fake the run over here, roll out, and, you know – set up and launch it, okay? And what happens here is Thompson, number 34, he gets a little too obsessed with Odell Beckham Jr. coming across, who had a few catches already in the game, and he paused for a second, and it caused issues. It really can. So here's Stafford, play action fake, all right? And you could see, again, I mean, hey, this is at his own 40, right? And his ability, again, just to, like, kind of flip his hips here as he comes around, flip the hips, and just absolutely, like, uncork it all in one motion. And, I mean, come on.
Mm.
That's 60. He threw it 60. You know, his own 40.
And just like
to the goal line.
I mean, right on the money.
Right on the money. And the best thing he did, too, is this right here. I'm going to try to get it just right here. Is Thompson, because he paused here, is running on a straight line this way. And Stafford's going to throw the ball over here. He's going to throw the ball over there. And that's where I want to show, because I'm going to go to the all 22 here so everybody could see it just a little bit better here. All right, so here we go.
Yeah, he did pull him over there, didn't
he? Yeah, he pulled him over there just a little bit. All right, so you see here, you watch him. His eyes are on Beckham, and they don't need to be. He needs to be going back here. You know, he's got to get back here in this one. But he's watching Beckham. And what I think is really funny, I mean, and now he's in, you know, oh, shit mode. And because he's running this way, the beauty is he lets the throw allows Van Jefferson to not break his stride or adjust. He gets to kind of stay on the same plane. And the ball is absolutely on the money. Here's one other thing I like, too. When the ball's like, look at Odell Beckham Jr. going across. All right, watch this. The ball goes up. Watch how quickly he throws up his hand here. He puts his hand up, like, right away. Like, he sees it, and he's like, look at him. He's going, oh, it's a touchdown. The ball's not even there yet. Still not there, but he knows that safety's paused a little bit.
And he was touchdown. Pretty open, too.
He was open. They had him, definitely. Hey, they run the ball. They get to their play-action game. They're going to be dangerous, and we know their drop-back pass game can carry the load if that doesn't all work.
There's a show.
That's a show, as Paul would say.
There it is.
That's it. That was a What the Fuck Happened Wednesday podcast. Hope everybody enjoyed. This is Chris Sims, Unbuttoned, presented by Under Armour. We always appreciate the sponsorship by Under Armour. I'm going to try that reflecting hoodie on soon. All right?
Let
we got
know.
$10 on the game on
yes,
Thursday,
we do.
Too. Don't forget about that.
Yep.
Please subscribe, rate, review. Tomorrow, PFT PM, Chris Sims, Unbuttoned, collaboration picks podcast. I'm kind of hot. We'll see if I can stay hot. All right? Paulie, you the man.
Good to see you.
Thanks a lot.
Enjoy your combo, Saturday, Sunday, NFL.
You know it. I can't wait. Good weekend of football here. All right, everybody. Be safe. Be cool. Peace out.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.